welcome. It's time for another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we are back, but we didn't go anywhere, really.
Yeah, just, no, not
it's
really.
Just another week.
Yeah, just a colder, just rainier
like
week.
The need to say, and we are back.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, because we're back, sort of, on the air.
Yeah, on the air.
On the
air,
yeah.
We're back on the air. And for all those listening to WBLZmedia.com, welcome.
Welcome.
To the show. Yes. Every Wednesday on Ironic Radio at WBLZmedia.com, you can find the Rebel Radio Podcast from 2 to 4 p.m. Central. For you Eastern folks, that's 3 to 5, who right now we are enemies with people in Boston. Friendly enemies.
Friendly enemies.
The Astros and the Red Sox are engaged in a battle of epic proportions in the American League Championship Series in baseball. And so right now I don't like Boston people.
No.
Well,
no.
Nothing personal. Just, you know, we want to kick your ass and go to the World Series.
That's yeah, it. Yeah. And we don't like that stuff. That shiny stuff on your forearm. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and Samuel Adams' beer isn't very good either.
Yeah, it's overrated.
Yeah. So, yeah. But so how you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, we had two wins, you know, this week from, you know, obviously not Sunday from the Astros, but we had an ugly win from the Texans. This is, yeah. Don't know what's going on in the red zone. Yeah, this is weird. I don't know. We all know, you know, what the answer is if we ask about it. Just got to coach
hire
it better.
Denzel Washington as your coach.
Yes.
And remember the Titans, and maybe he'll encourage them to do better. Like, go get them, son, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, tell someone, I had to support my four brothers.
Yeah.
He's like, I thought you were an only child. He don't know that. But yeah, it's been a fun week for sports. You know, on the baseball side, you know, it's at least been interesting. On the football side, you know, J.J. Watt's doing really good. I know we have some people on WLBZ that like sports. So, you know, of course we'll give the sports a nod. Give the sports a nod. So I'm hoping for some more Astros wins this week. I know we'll get them.
Yeah. Movie news, Venom's doing well at the box office.
Yeah.
I saw that.
A lot
Two
of money.
Straight weeks. I still haven't heard anything great about it. Everyone says it's not as bad as it seems. Whenever I hear it's not as bad as they make it out to be, I end up kind of thinking, no, it's kind of bad. So I don't know. I'll probably see it eventually. Yeah. But at this point, I don't think I'm going to rush out to the theaters to see. I'll wait for it on video.
I almost, like, if I had the chance, like, this, you know, this Friday, I thought about, you know, going to go, you know, catch a movie and I feel like I'd rather see Halloween just because I want to see it. I just want to see how they do it. I hope it's decent. You know, horror movies, you know, nowadays it's like they, you know, do so many different things. I think horror movies, especially this one, used to be a whole lot better. You know, so hopefully it's good. And I do want to see it, but I do want to see Venom. It intrigues me that the reviews are very mixed. But like you said, you know, it's... Which way does that swing? You know, right. How are you going to feel about the film?
But that's a good point. You know, movie's coming out. So we always start the show with download this, where we tell people what we watched, streamed, downloaded this week. So what have you watched or streamed or downloaded this week?
I watched a lot of horror movies this week. Not horror movies, horror movies.
Hey, you know, whatever you do in your spare time, man, you know.
Hey, or there is a mix of both that Robert Englund did, you know, star in with zombie strippers.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
But we don't judge here, you know, if you want to watch horror movies.
Yeah, horror movies.
That's whatever you do in your spare time.
Yeah, so I watched John Carpenter's Halloween. I watched...
You know, I've never watched the original, like, all the way through. It's funny, I've seen, like, that H2O one.
Oh, yeah.
But I've never, like... I'm not, like... Not necessarily not a... I want to say not a fan, but mm-hmm. I've just never, like, been intrigued by that character. When it comes to horror characters, I like the character we're doing today, Freddy Krueger, Jason...
Mm-hmm.
But I never was pulled towards
Michael Myers
or you like Pinhead. I was never pulled towards that, and mm-hmm. Which is strange because I tend to like science fiction horror. You would think I would lean towards Hellraiser, but I never really. But I have seen Hellraiser at least, but I don't think I've ever actually. I've seen bits and pieces of 78 Halloween, and And a friend of mine who listens to the show, she's probably spinning around right now going, what? Mark hasn't watched Halloween? Because she actually texted me and said, as we were covering Halloween, I said, no, not this year, you know.
Well, we'll cover it and download this.
Yeah, so I figured we'll give it a little bit of mention. So you watched the original.
Yeah, and, you know, we did mention Halloween whenever we did Escape from New York, because John Carpenter had done Halloween, and then he did Escape from New York. Or was it he did Escape from New York?
Halloween was first.
Yeah. Halloween was first, yeah. And so he had so much success that it gave him, you know, the notoriety and the credibility to do Escape from New York. And it's a great film. The score, the piano score is really good. The beginning, I always remember it as a kid because I'm like, oh, well, boobs, you know. It's right. The little kid puts on the clown mask and the, I guess his older sister just got done, you know, doing it with her boyfriend, and she's still topless fixing her makeup in the mirror, and she just, you know, gets stabbed to death. And I'm watching it, and my wife is like, oh, so you like bloody boobs, huh? Is that what gets you on? And I was like, if I wanted to watch bloody boobs, I'd turn on 13 Ghosts. And she's like, oh, you went there, huh? I was like, those are some epic bloody boobs and 13 Ghosts, let me tell you. In fact, the guy accidentally gets cut in half sideways because he's staring at him. He's like, nice tits. And then those glass doors close on him in 13 Ghosts. He just gets sliced, and one half slides down the one side like a friggin' pickle stuck to a glass. And then the other side goes down, and he's just like, you know, there's a lot of you see him early on. You know, they don't, it's not like the film we're about to talk about. You see Michael, well, you know, the lower from the neck down a lot. And it's weird how he gets out of the mental facility. You know, that part's kind of, you know, they don't do a whole lot of continuity with that.
Right.
You know, it's just they show up, there's medical patients everywhere, and then he steals a minivan and then, you know, just rides around town stalking these girls, kills the best friend, and then of course they're on the run for their life at the end. But if you haven't seen 1978 Halloween, I highly encourage it. There's definitely plenty of nights in October for you to knock it out. It's really fun to watch. I also decided I was going to watch Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. Not as good as this film. Dream Warriors, which is arguably, you know, it's definitely top one or
Dream
two.
Dream Warriors is the guilty pleasure of the nightmare movies, I think.
It really is. That's whenever the graphics are really good. There's some awesome boobs in that one, too. They're not bloody, though. It's really weird. She sucks the tongue out of the death kid and then just, like, tongue ties him to the bed. And then, of course, you know, number four is the continuation. Our new heroine's killed off in that one. Freddy 5, I tried to watch a little bit of it. That's the Dream Child. That one's like just really, really bad.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's past Freddy's prime. I really wanted to watch New Nightmare again.
Don't forget Freddy's Dead.
Freddy's Dead.
I actually saw Freddy's Dead in theaters, and it was kind of quirky fun.
It's quirky fun. He's still Freddy, and he still has that campiness that you like in Freddy. But it's definitely way better than the Dream Child. I think a month ago I watched Freddy versus Jason. And that one was okay. We wanted to see that matchup. You know, everyone always talked. I think at the time, for some reason, we were always talking about Freddy versus Jason, and we finally got it out, and it was okay. I think it was a lot of hype going in to see that movie. And it's kind of mid-pack of the Freddy movies, if I had to, you know, put it in there, just right in the middle somewhere. that's kind of what I watched, a bunch of Freddy movies, John Carpenter's Halloween. Definitely good films to go catch if you have the time this Halloween.
Yeah, I didn't watch as much this week. A lot of baseball with the Astros on. And I do remember we did watch, the boys wanted to watch Captain America Civil War. So I remember watching that this week. And that's probably all I really watched this week. I sat down and watched some of that with them. And, you know, it's still up there in top five or six Marvel movies so far
you know,
that they've done. It's really good. I you know, there's things I pick up. You know, you go back, you watch a movie, and there's always things you notice later on that you didn't necessarily notice before. And just the overall emotional impact of the end battle between Steve and Tony is really, really does come across much better than I really originally remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And having had a lot happen since then with Infinity War and everything else, you realize that moment now, if you go back and watch Civil War, when Tony and Steve do see each other face to face, it's going to be quite a moment in Avengers 4, you know, because we know it's happening, you know, that they'll eventually come face to face and have their reunion. Or do they? I mean, maybe Steve doesn't make it and Tony has that regret too that he was never able to, you know.
I think it could go either way.
Or, you know,
I feel
vice versa.
Yeah, or vice versa. Yeah, that's a fair point. Hopefully they do see each other.
But yeah, but so I watched that. I kind of slacked. I did, though, it's not quite a download this, but I did go by the comics store on Saturday. They had a Walking Dead Day.
Oh, nice.
Similar to the Batman Day they did a few weeks ago. And this was just celebrating 15 years of the Walking Dead comic. And they gave away a free comic, which was just a collection of the previous free comics they had done on, like, Free Comic Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these buttons that are here on the table. And this bandana is kind of cool. I'll have to put a picture on our Instagram of this. You know,
cool.
It's like a zombie bandana. And they had grab bags, which were the real popular issues of the series, like issue 1, the first appearance of Michonne, first appearance of the Governor. And they had multiple covers inside them. You got just a standard cover, a standard cover virgin, which means no logo. Then they had a sketch cover and a sketch virgin. And I decided to go to grab the first appearance of Michonne, and I got the virgin colored cover.
Is that the one where she has both zombies on chains?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
So I got the special variant cover they did for it is J. Scott Campbell did the variant. So that was a little something I did do this weekend. It was kind of spur of the moment. I was like, it's Walking Dead Day. We had Michael's football game, and we went over to the comic store, and we stopped by the grocery store, and that's why I was like, well, recording's probably not going to happen Saturday. That's why we're recording today. You know, and then the Astros played Saturday night, so we had to do that. So that's it for me on Download This. I did a little adventure of the comic store, too, besides watching Captain America Civil War. So we are doing Halloween Horror Month
on
the Rebel Radio Podcast as we continue our month of horror films brought to you by nobody, just by us.
Yeah, just by us.
And so today we're doing a favorite movie of a lot of people, I think, when it comes to horror. A favorite character, anyways. And that is A Nightmare on Elm Street from 1984, the original Wes Craven. A classic. I would definitely say it's a classic.
Oh, yeah.
Even though watching it now, it's you notice it's 80s-ish. Is that a word?
80s-ish? Yeah, it is 80s-ish.
And it's campiness. And maybe it's not as good as it once was, but it's still, I think, a classic in the horror genre.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And this is a favorite film just in general for a lot of people because it is well acted. It's a well acted horror movie.
Oh, they believe in what they're doing for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, for people that don't know, I mean, New Line Cinema really needed this film to produce. Yeah,
they were about going under.
And in fact, this was, you know, New Line Cinema was... You know, it had a running joke that this was the house that Freddie built for a while. So this film, you know, really did good whenever it came out, and it's a favorite for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have people like Johnny Depp, who's their first his first debut. Appearance, yeah. And you know, he was you know, other people that were runners up to that role were Charlie Sheen, which I could see Charlie Sheen kind of the same hair as Charlie Sheen in the film. Yeah, I guess everyone had that 80s hair. Yeah. You know, Kurt Russell was going to, you know, had possibly, you know.
Seems like every time we do a movie from the 80s, Kurt Russell was always in the lead for being in the film.
And now he's going to play Santa Claus. Isn't that right?
Dude. Oh. That movie looks ridiculous, but I'm watching the shit out of it.
I haven't seen anything. Like, I haven't looked at it. Does he have an eye patch?
No.
No, that'd be cool.
It's Kurt Russell, Santa Claus.
Yeah, dude. That's friggin' badass.
Yeah.
But the film, you know, this is a film that was highly inspired by Wes Craven's childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see some of it, you know, about the, you know, Fred Krueger, the bully that, you know, bullied him in school, that he has a little ode to him in Last House on the Left. If you've seen that movie's really jacked up. Mm-hmm. It's more violent than this film, really.
Yeah, Craven has definitely made more violent movies.
Yeah,
than this.
And you know, he does a really good job, you know, taking the experiences they had. Like, you know, he took the hobo outside of his room, and he just looked at him, and I guess the hobo just kind of felt Wes Craven's eyes on him, and the hobo just turns around and stares, you know, just for what seems like forever, just back at. Back at Wes Craven, and you know, the guy had on a trench coat and a fedora, and you know, of course, Fred Krueger, you know, comes from his high school bully, and they put the two together, And that's how we came up with Freddy Krueger. And there was a story back then about a kid in, I think it's in somewhere over in Eurasia, like Europe or Asia. A kid did not want to go to sleep, and he had a coffee machine under his bed. He refused to go to bed, and he would take sleeping pills. And then, you know, finally he succumbed to sleep. And after 2 minutes of being asleep, he started screaming. And his family ran upstairs and saw him, and he died. He died in his sleep. And so it's accumulation of all of that into this. So, you know, and it's really pieced together well. You know, Nancy has a lot of layers. Mm-hmm. She's dealing with a lot. Her best friend dies.
Early in the film,
which this is something Wes Craven's done before in Scream. You know, we see the opening character, Tina, and we think Tina is going to be the heroine of the film, right. You know, someone that, you know, we might see in the sequel, but she's definitely going to be through the film. And he just yanks the carpet out from under the audience, just like in Scream with Drew Barrymore. You could argue that he did it better in Scream, because Drew Barrymore, you could argue, yeah, she's going to be the lead over now with Neve Campbell.
Right.
So Tina, she dies within the first 15 minutes, and it's just a gruesome death.
Yeah.
I mean, she's cut through her chest, drug on the wall, thrown into the ground, and
it was all done with a rotating set that they built to move the room around on a hydraulic. And instead of using standard wire work to wire her from the ceiling, they used a room that could move, and they shot the camera at different angles to make it look like she was on the ceiling.
Yeah, and so her boyfriend has to run out of there. He goes through the window. They open the door. There's blood everywhere. The cops come, which her father's played by John Saxon, who was really big. And we've done a movie on him, you know, earlier. He was in Enter the Dragon.
Yeah.
And he, you know, Tina's parents, another layer to Tina, her parents are just not the best parents. Her mom's a drunk. Her dad buries himself in its work. And you almost think that maybe there was another child before Nancy,
right,
that, you know, and that's why they divorced, that, you know, maybe she was a victim of Fred Krueger's.
Right. We mean Nancy's parents. She said Tina's parents. But yeah,
Nancy's parents. You think that maybe they, you know, she had like a younger sibling or something, because they're split up, and they did choose to act on, you know, I'm sure a lot of people.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because in early versions of the script, and I saw in the novel version, mm-hmm, there are mentions of other kids.
Yes.
That were taken, and I think she did have a brother or sister at one time.
Yeah, but at the time, there was a lot of talk about, you know, pedophilia and human trafficking at the time, and this movie, you know, the directors and the producers, they didn't want to get caught up in, you know, the scrutiny that might cause on the film. So
originally, Freddy was a child molester, not a child murderer.
Yeah.
And in the 2010 remake, they did make him a child molester.
Yes. Yeah. They do focus more on that aspect in the 2010 remake, which is probably at the bottom of my list.
Oh, yeah.
It's like I thought, you know, the guy who played Rorschach was going to do a pretty good job.
Yeah, well, he did.
Yeah.
But the rest of the movie wasn't.
Yeah. The rest of the movie wasn't. But, you know, they're split up for a reason, you know, and maybe that is the reason, you know, it could very well be.
Yeah.
And so we go from on this, and, you know, they, you know, she's in school, and
they've all talked about bad dreams.
Dreams that they're having, similarities between them, knives for fingers, scratching on the glass. I think the next dream is whenever Nancy wakes up in school,
mm-hmm,
and she sees her friend in a body bag, a clear body bag, I think, and she's being drugged down the hallway.
Right.
And we still haven't seen Freddy, really, not much. In fact, we only see him for a total of 7 minutes in this film.
Yeah, he's not in a whole lot.
Yeah, you figure.
But we get a good look at him in this scene, though, in the factory where he's dragging her.
Yeah, in the factory, in his boiler room.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hall pass monitor, or whatever she is, whatever the lady's like, you need a hall pass.
Yeah.
Turns into Freddy, and then goes into the boiler room, and this is probably one of the freakier scenes. I don't think it's the scariest scene. I don't know if it's the scariest scene. It's definitely one of the freakiest ones, because there's a friggin' body bag next to you, and then she wakes up in school. Maybe situationally, you know, you're in school, you think you're safe, but you're not. You can't run from your nightmares. And that's the thing. You know, these people, they're all trying to run from Freddy, but you can't run from your nightmares. Right. You have to sleep sometime, right? So it goes on. And what happens? Okay, so the boyfriend, they captured him because she went to school that day. And he ends up getting killed in his sleep. And this is a running thing that Freddy usually does in films, is he makes it look like these people killed themselves,
right?
Instead of, you know, Freddy killed them. I mean, you know, in Dream Warriors, you know, the blonde haired lead, a female lead in that film, comes to. I think her name's Christian or Kristen. She comes to. And she's slicing her wrist after her mom wakes her up. And this one, it looks like he hung himself.
Right.
You know, and after, it looks like, you know, he butchered his girlfriend, Tina. And, you know, Nancy's like, he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't kill himself. He didn't kill his girlfriend. And then, you know, all this fear, I guess all this fear is making, you know, Freddy stronger. So, you know, Freddy appears more apparent in her dreams. And she tells, you know, Glenn, she's talking to Glenn back and forth on this, and she's like, you know, she has to tell him not to fall asleep. And so she's calling over. Her parents don't want her talking to him because of what happened with Tina and everything. And so they take the phone off the hook, and this is one of, they use the rotating room again.
Right.
And this scene was really crazy because whenever they filmed Glenn's death, the blood swirling around the room got onto the electronics. It was a hazard for a lot of the crew members, but it's one of the most gruesome deaths. And it's uncharacteristic of Freddy, because Freddy was big on, you know, like we just talked about, making it look like someone did this to themselves, or it was an accident, something like that. But Glenn just dies in just some gruesome way.
Yeah, I think there's like 30 gallons of blood for this scene, or
yes,
something like that.
It's a ridiculous amount.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just friggin' incinerated or carved up, whatever. I don't even know if they find the body.
Yeah.
Because I think in the original script, he was supposed to rise back up from the bed, but I don't know how it would have continued after that.
Yeah, so, they tried filming it, and it just didn't look right, so they scrapped the idea.
Yeah. So then, you know, her dad's across the street investigating, and she tells her dad she knows who it is, and he needs to be here 30 minutes after midnight. So she sets all these traps. It's like Home Alone,
yeah.
But, you know, but it's against Freddy.
Yeah, and when I was watching, I felt like the movie's moved at a good pace the first hour, and it's letting the story unfold, and then it just sort of, like, has a quick, it ends fast,
yeah,
the last 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah,
where she tries to go where she's going to trap him, because she figures out that she's got to try to bring him into reality.
Yeah, she's got to try and yank him into reality, and she sets up a sledgehammer, and whenever she sets up the sledgehammer on, you know, in the, you know, the trap door, the little spring, I forget what she set up to make the sledgehammer go down, but it was very reminiscent of Home Alone. And then she puts gunpowder in a light bulb, which I don't even know how you do that.
Right, but without it getting too hot or
tired. So, she puts it in there. Luckily, she doesn't blow herself up setting up that trap. And she sets up a tripwire, and she goes to sleep. Sets herself a ton of alarm clocks to go off. And Freddy doesn't come with her whenever she tries to bring him back into the real world. But then all of a sudden he appears, she leads him through the house. She's beating the hell out of him. She breaks the windows. She's yelling for help. And she's able to set him on fire.
Right.
And he runs down to the basement. The police are able to come in. Her dad comes in, and then he's nowhere to be found. And all of a sudden he's like in her mom's room.
Yeah.
And burnt, you know, her and John Saxon, you know, her dad, John Saxon plays her dad. They're looking, and the wife just dies, I guess, and sinks into the bed, and the bed's like flashing like a strobe light. And then whenever her dad leaves and she's still in the house, she realizes that Freddy is feeding off of their fear. And so she takes it away, and, you know, that leaves him powerless. And then he disappears. You know, Wes Craven wanted Nancy to be different than a lot of other females in a lot of horror movies. And we do see that here. She's strong. She fights back. She doesn't trip over something. Or, you know, unfortunately, she doesn't lose her shirt. And, you know, the girls don't fly everywhere like in Scream. Or was that Scary Movie? Was that Scary Movie?
That was probably that
was Scary Movie. Yeah. But, yeah, so, she, you know, she fights back and she's different. And the Wes Craven intended the film to end with her and her mom just kind of smiling, you know, walking outside the house. But then the producer felt like they need to really make it look like there was a sequel. Mm. And so, you know, Nancy gets in the car with her friends. They're driving away and, you know, Freddy is the car and then Freddy's hand comes out of the window of the house and grabs her mom, presumably killing her, and it ends.
Yeah.
And it's to be continued after that. And, you know.
Right.
But, you know, we don't see Nancy again until Dream Warriors. She's not in Freddy's right. Revenge. But, and that's how the film ends.
Yeah.
Very, you know, very conflicting scenes. But yeah.
And the movie, and that's where the movie kind of maybe has its faults, is that it doesn't seem focused at times, like you said, the way Freddy kills and the way that this plot unfolds. Like, there's no real explanation of where he got these powers.
Yeah.
The parents, like, your mother explains to her that he was a child killer that we chose to murder. But, like, okay, so where does he get these powers and this ability?
You know, exactly.
There's no explanation for it. And I know in later films they kind of try to explain it, but
yeah.
The mythology of Freddy was never really solid and set in stone. But what makes this movie work, though, is Wes Craven's directing, who makes scenes really moody and memorable,
mm-hmm.
Really good kills in it.
Yeah.
And Robert Englund.
Robert Englund.
We're doing Nightmare on Elm Street, and we haven't even mentioned
him. Yeah, we haven't even talked about him.
You know, Englund, originally a lot of the script had very little dialogue in it. And he allowed Englund to improvise a little bit in this film. And, of course, as further films went on, Englund really developed the character and gave him his campiness. But in this movie, originally, he had hardly any lines. That Freddy was going to be a silent killer the whole time. But they felt that he needed to have a little more personality, and they let him have a few lines. And the lines that he does deliver are really kind of brutal and, and cheesy at the same time.
Pretty cryptic. He's probably the least campiest in this film.
Yeah.
Because this film is more of a horror film than the others, in my opinion. Obviously, they're all horror films.
Right.
But it focuses more on, you know, the brutal aspect of Freddy. And they don't make him seem too campy in this film.
Right.
But it definitely becomes a running effect. I think they saw a little bit of that campiness. And they're like, hey, we want more of that.
And probably not until New Nightmare, which Craven came back for, did they bring him back to this original idea of Freddy.
Yeah.
And he was also supposed to be a lot more gruesome. A lot more sores and things come off his body, but they couldn't get the makeup to work.
Yeah.
Wes Craven's original vision for Freddy was a lot more disgusting, a lot more violent. He also chose to give him the glove because he wanted to be a simple weapon, but was believable to be used. He didn't want to be a typical horror guy with a giant machete or swords or guns. He wanted to be something a little bit more simplistic, I guess, was the words I think I read they used.
Yeah. And Robert Englund actually cut himself putting on the glove for the first time. But I guess I guess anyone probably would. And you're like, hey, I wouldn't. He probably didn't expect them to be sharpened.
No, and the scene at the beginning is actually not Robert Englund. That's the guy who made the glove, because he was the only one who knew how to put it together. So he shot his hands putting the glove on at the beginning of the movie.
That's funny. I didn't realize that. Oh, man. But, yeah, it took 3 hours to do that makeup. So they're probably like, you know, hey, let's cut some of these costume ideas. It's already taken 3 hours to get this guy ready.
Yeah.
I don't see how they made this film in just a month.
Shot in 30 days.
Yeah. I saw that and I was like, man, that's pretty fast.
Considering the special effect shots and everything else, because like they use fishing poles for the elongated arms with tubes on them to make Freddy's arms. And I guess they walked behind Robert Englund or something, or on the side of him to make it look. And I remember when I was a kid, like, that scene was really kind of scary when I was little. And now I watch them, like, this is kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
the elongated arms.
That's kind of like the, after Dream Warriors, it was, The Dream Master, and that one,
the stretching head, is that one?
That was a stretching head, and then they make the girl have a nightmare where she's turning into a cockroach. Right. I don't know if you remember the cockroach arms.
Oh yeah.
And I wonder if they used the same effect for those cockroach arms and Freddy 5.
They used where Freddy's on the phone.
Yeah.
It was like a prosthetic they used with a tongue, and Heather Langenkamp actually wanted to keep it. Which Wes Craven thought that was really weird, you know. He was like, "Okay,
weird." And she does really like this performance of hers. It's one of her favorite performances.
And she still does cons. She was at Conpalooza a couple of years ago, covering Kong, because she's accepted over the years. This was her iconic role. She did.
Yeah. She came back, you know, for arguably the second best film in the franchise.
And she came back for New Nightmare.
And she came back for She came back for New Nightmare too. And she dropped the name of a dream drug that suppresses dreams and dream warriors, and it's actually a running theme that occurs in the later films as well.
Well, they alluded to it in this one. She says, "Can you just give me something that keeps me from dreaming or something?"
Yeah. Whenever she's in the hospital, and her dreams are being evaluated, that's Wes Craven's ex-wife that is playing the nurse. The little girl. I forgot to mention the little girl that's playing a jump rope, hopscotch, whatever, out front. The two people that owned the house that let Wes Craven borrow it, and New Line Cinema borrow it for the film, that's their daughter. So their little girl got to star in the film. That was probably part of the perks. Like, hey, we got to save money. Hey, let your kid have a role in this film.
Yeah, that's where we get the nursery rhyme at the beginning. The 1-2, Freddy's coming for you, which I remember being in school, and kids would say that all the time to try to scare other kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was quite a playground funny thing.
Yes, especially at that time.
Yeah.
You know, 80s, early 90s, because I believe these, the Nightmare on Elm Street films, they went into, 95, 94? Probably they stretched into there.
Well, Jason vs. Freddy was late 90s, early 2000s, so yeah.
I think it was 2003, yeah. It was definitely a nursery rhyme that stuck around forever, because on Channel 4, they showed Paramount and New Line Cinema movies all the time. I forget which channel that actually was. I just know it is Channel 4, and it would just always have horror movies on there, Hell House, Dead House, all kinds of Poltergeist. It would always show up.
What's funny is the words Elm Street are never even said in this movie.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
It's never even mentioned. It's mentioned in the novels and things like that came out, but in the actual movie, they never say the word Elm Street.
That's interesting.
Which was based on a street in Illinois that Wes Craven knew about. That's where he got the idea. And so he said he put a lot of this together from his life experiences and things that he went through, and he developed his character. As far as a character, where do you think Freddy stands in the icons of horror over the years?
Oh, you could argue that he's the best horror icon. I mean, he's sinister, he's campy, he's got this odd sense of humor, he's got a personality. He definitely has one.
And I think that's a good point. You know, Jason. I mean, there's hardcore Friday the 13th fans that might argue that Jason is the most iconic, or Michael Myers is the most iconic. But there's something about Freddy that, in a creepy way, I won't say you relate to him, because that would be weird, but you would, but you have more of a sense of who he is because he talks.
Yeah.
That's probably a good way, because you don't get anything from Jason. You get from Michael Myers, from what I know about Michael Myers, you get from what the other characters tell you.
Yeah.
That he was in an insane place and things like that. Jason, you do get a little bit from what his mother tells him in the first one, and because his mother was the killer in the first one.
Of course.
But you never get words from those characters directly. Not that Freddy's telling us who he is or what he's about. You still get the sense of knowing who he is through his campy dialogue and his cheesiness, and I think that's what makes him very iconic.
Yeah. And Pinhead, it looked like they were going a really good route in Hellraiser 2. They made it to where they revealed that all of these people that became the I forget the exact terminology they used to label Pinhead and the other people. I know there's
Cenobites.
So all the Cenobites, they used to be people. They had lives. Pinhead used to be a sergeant. He was in the military.
Right.
And in Hellraiser 2, whenever they're fighting, and I think Nancy is the name of the character in Hellraiser right. as well. And they're fighting to protect her so she can exit the realm, exit the box, the ultimate bridge between pleasure and pain. And she's leaving. The doctor that her ex stepmom created in the film, it turns the Cenobites back to normal. And you kind of get a sense of these guys they used to be something and then they kind of become heroes at the end, but then in 3 it's weird because he just unleashes hell and he becomes a demon again. Now all of a sudden he's a demon again that doesn't want anything other than death, and then that just keeps continuing through the other films, and then he's just like drag that character down every single film that they made.
Oh yeah, those went downhill. Not that Freddy didn't go downhill much more, but I think Freddy though also accepted what it was throughout his films. They realized it was campy, and Nightmare on Elm Street's movies were a little a little cheesy, but a little fun as well. But yet they kept that horror aspect. Where from what I know about the Hellraiser films, that they got really bad and really dumb.
Really bad.
And at least Freddy was able to stay in theaters where Hellraiser started going direct to DVD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the first three Hellraiser films are good. But, the fourth, the fifth, like you said, they started going straight to DVD. And you only go straight to DVD for a reason. I mean, I'm sorry, Rob Schneider, but there's a reason that, The Animal and The Hot Chick and films like that just went straight to DVD.
Wow. Only on Rebel Radio Podcast can we get Rob Schneider in a movie with Freddy Krueger.
Yes.
While we're on the same episode.
While we're on the same episode.
But I would agree. I think Freddy is, I might put him at number one as far as iconic slashers. Maybe not movie monsters. I don't know if I'd put him number one because when it comes to movie monsters, it's hard to put anyone above Dracula as far as a movie monster or even Godzilla for that possibility. But as far as slashers go, I think Freddy Krueger is easily, I would put him above Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
Because those are your top three.
Yeah, easily.
I know you're doing Leatherface for Halloween and you're a big Leatherface fan, but I still think he's sitting at 4. He's maybe even 5. Maybe Pinhead might even be above him.
Yeah, he gets credit for being the first slasher.
Right.
But
his popularity isn't as big as the other ones.
No, it's not. It's if you're a film lover and you know the history of the films, then Leatherface and you have a little bit more appreciation for him, but he hasn't been done right in a while. I mean, the first film was really good. Second one's not bad, and then the third one's just weird as hell.
And everything I've heard about these Platinum Dune reboots that I haven't heard anything good about them.
Yeah,
most people say these Platinum Dune reboots have been just trying to cash in on the character, and none of them are really, like, they've had moments, but none of them have been really properly done.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The 2003 remake wasn't bad from Leatherface for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they do kind of keep it similar, but it's still kind of just turns into
that's the one with Jessica Biel. I did see that one.
Yeah. But it's still, it focuses more on the gore, a little less on the characters. Yeah. But that's probably the best remake that'd been done. There was one that was made with Matthew McConaughey and what's her name from
Renee Zellweger. Yeah.
And that one wasn't even that great.
Was that a remake or was that like Texas Chainsaw 4?
That was Texas Chainsaw a new beginning or something like that. Yeah, and they tried to make one, and it's like 94. It was made in like 94. A young Matthew McConaughey, he's crazy as fuck in it.
Yeah.
But it fell short. Texas Chainsaw 3 is probably one of the worst. It's like the acting is horrible, and like the trailer is just so friggin' over the top.
Right.
I mean, a silver chainsaw gets thrown from the lake by this mysterious, corpse right. hand, and then Leatherface catches it, points it to the air like he's friggin' Thor, lightning strikes it, and he turns around, it's like, vroom, vroom. It's like, Texas Chainsaw 3, the Saw is family. And I'm like, what? I'm like, all right, maybe you guys know this is a bad film, and you're like, hey, let's just have some kind of fun with it and see what happens. It's like, man, it was still bad.
So as far as Freddy Krueger goes, do you think he'll be back? I know they tried with the 2010 remake with Jackie Earle Haley as Freddy, and he was arguably the best part of the movie. The rest of the movie wasn't that good.
Yeah.
I think the character is so iconic that I think Michael Myers, who's coming out this weekend, if he can make a comeback, we're still getting Hellraiser movies, even though they're mostly directed DVD.
Mm-hmm.
There's another Friday the 13th remake in the works. I think he will be back.
I think so.
And I would love to see one that's really... Not necessarily, it doesn't have to be necessarily scary, but just a really solid Freddy Krueger story and done properly with some good kills in it and some good horror aspects. But I think that's one thing of these reboots. They try so hard to scare the kids nowadays and they forget to focus on, and they also try to have a lot of gore.
Yeah.
And forget to focus on story. And I think of all the horror icons other than maybe Michael Myers, that Freddy lends himself to having a really good story told behind him.
Yeah.
And hopefully we get that one day, a proper reboot.
I will give an honorable mention to Ghostface. Even though, like the original Ghostface was the best, because right. It's like the film circled around, like, things you don't do in a horror film. And, right. And so I really like that aspect of it, where it was kind of a play on itself, on its own genre. And an interesting kill, you know, in the beginning. I mean, Drew Barrymore's gutted and strangled by her own intestines. it was a new look of horror that we really hadn't seen. The Fonz is the principal.
I never saw the fourth one they tried to bring it back.
It wasn't. I actually liked it. It wasn't bad for a fourth one. I think after one, the rest are solid. Two's okay, you know. And the second one, I want to say that it's someone who used to date her mom.
Yeah.
And then they turn on her in theater class.
I saw the two and three. I just never saw that fourth one.
Yeah. And then, the fourth one is her sister.
That was just a few years ago, right? They tried to bring it back, yeah.
Yeah, the sister tries to get fame, too, and she comes back. Sydney comes back to town on the anniversary of her mom's death, and her sister is Ghostface, and that's the twist. It's like, because she wants everyone else to die, and she wants to be the survivor. She wants the spotlight. She's tired of her sister, you know, being the one that they always talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, there you go. See, my friend Naomi, who called us, who texted me, asked me how we knew Halloween. We hit a little bit of Halloween, a little bit of Hellraiser, a little bit of Scream, and lots of Nightmare on Elm Street, all in one episode.
And Rob Schneider.
And some Leatherface. So we're bringing the horror for Halloween Horrors Month.
Heck yeah. This was a packed episode, man.
Yeah, and we're not done. We have two more Halloween movies to go before the month is over. So any last thoughts on Nightmare on Elm Street before we move on to today's news briefs and things?
No, it was a fun film to watch. I'm probably going to watch New Nightmare. Naomi, I think we're friends on Facebook, too. I think I know who you are. Reach out to the show, post something on our page. Don't do direct message. Put it on the page so other people, you know, if they have any ideas too. If you want us to watch something and kind of include a mini segment in our download this, go ahead and shoot us something. We'll watch it. You know, give us something a goal to shoot for, and we'll make it, you know, a little bit more packed of an episode. Yeah.
But overall, I think Nightmare on Elm Street holds up pretty well for 30 years later.
Absolutely.
It's still a fun little horror flick, and it's not scary anymore, and now you just kind of like laugh at parts of it, but it's very enjoyable. I also like the fact that it's only an hour and a half. It's easy to sit down, watch it, and enjoy it, and not it doesn't take up a lot of time.
No, you know, it doesn't.
As much as I love epic movies, nowadays, if I want to sit down and watch like Infinity War, it's like, man, I got to have 3 hours to watch that.
Yeah,
sometimes it's nice to watch these older movies that are an hour and a half. But Nightmare on Elm Street, a good horror movie that still holds up well today, and a fun one to talk about on our Halloween horrors. So we've got a few news briefs to talk about here. And if I can read my own handwriting. Oh, yeah, big news. James Gunn, man, he, Marvel,
oh, yeah.
Disney Marvel, of course, fired him for the accusations. Or not accusations. He wasn't accused of anything. Bad tweets.
Yeah, bad
apologies
tweets.
Apologies there. So you know what? Let's do the best thing. Hey, Warner Brothers called him up. Hey, man, what are you doing? Nothing. Marvel fired my ass. Want to come work for us? Sure. Looks like he's going to write and possibly direct Suicide Squad 2. And this is nothing but great news.
No, obviously, this is awesome for DC.
I thought Suicide Squad wasn't that good. I thought it was pretty weak. I hated Jared Leto as the Joker.
Yeah.
As we talked about on an episode a couple years ago when the movie came out. So this is good news for DC. Because they're, as we've talked many times on the show, they're not so far off from having their universe saved. But I do also think they need to focus on some individual films before bringing all these characters together. And James Gunn coming in, able to write characters like Deadshot and Harley Quinn and these kind of quirky characters. He did it with he took Guardians of the Galaxy, a relatively unknown group of characters, and made it a highly successful couple of films. So there is no reason to believe that he can't strike lightning twice in the Suicide Squad.
This is Marvel's version of Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, bad guys turn good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, because there are more bad guys that are forced to do things by the government.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
But it's right up his alley as far as the type of characters.
Yeah, and I think I think his writing and his pot, and if he does direct, I think this could be the film that, you know, really just changes DC's tone. Well, and
possibly, it's still hard to get. The problem with DC is they have arguably 6 or 7 major characters.
Yeah.
Between Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Green Lantern, and
is it that they just don't, you know, maybe know how to use them with the directors?
Well, and that's the thing. They don't. Their secondary characters aren't always the strongest. Where Marvel has found this way to make secondary characters be very successful. And so I think that's what DC's maybe going to attempt to do that with Suicide Squad. Okay. I don't know if I'd go as far as saying it's going to jumpstart the universe back into where they need it to be, because I still think for the universe to work, you need a really solid Batman or Superman film. You already got one with Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Or you need a solid Justice League film to make it work. So secondary characters like Suicide Squad, I don't think are really going to make your universe perfect, but they aren't going to hurt. It's not going to hurt to have a really good film either.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt.
And possibly with a sequel, make it not all about the bad guys. Man, I know Batman appeared in the first Suicide Squad, but maybe bring him in this a little bit more this time, possibly, you know, and see how that works. And whoever's playing Batman. And I guess the rumor is now Affleck is still going to play Batman, so who knows? We'll see. But I think Warner Brothers is really smart on doing this, and I think you pay James Gunn whatever he wants, you bring him in, you do it, you make it happen,
yep,
and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, and I think he will. I think he will do a really good job. Is this the beginning of a trend? It's like, you know, they got Joss Whedon over there doing Birds of Prey. You've got James Gunn over here.
It could be.
Who else are they going to bring over, man?
Yeah.
Are they going to bring Farbow? Is Farbow going to come over?
He's too busy doing Star Wars.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. He is.
Mandalorian.
Maybe Wahidi. Wahidi come over here.
Maybe. We'll see.
But yeah, that's really good news. I'm excited. I hope to see something good come out of Suicide Squad 2.
And Aquaman looks great. And, you know, I have all the faith in the world that Wonder Woman 84 is going to be good too. Because Patty Jenkins made a remarkable first Wonder Woman film. And, you know, I know people say that ending of Wonder Woman is a bit of an action fest, but I really liked that movie a lot. I thought it was really well done. So hopefully DC gets back on track and James Gunn helps him out. Now we're going to talk some Marvel, though.
Yeah.
Couple of brief things. First, Iron Fist was canceled after 2 seasons. I guess the ratings for the new season that just went on Netflix last month weren't where Netflix wanted it to be. You know, people were shocked. I'm not shocked, because I haven't watched it, but everything I've heard is it's just not as good as the other Marvel TV shows. It was a lesser-known character. Let's be honest. Everyone wants to see Heroes for Hire.
Yeah.
You want to see a Luke Cage Iron Fist show, and maybe we'll get this. Maybe Iron Fist will continue on the Disney streaming service. But not a shocker to me, because Disney, we all know that they control this, even though Netflix has the rights. They want to eventually get things on their own streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
But Disney's not stupid either, and they're not going to cancel stuff like The Punisher and Daredevil that are doing really well for them.
Yeah, that's true. We'll see. You know, maybe the show's canceled, but you know, maybe they don't recast. They haven't said anything about recasting the character, I don't think.
No.
Yeah, so you know, maybe we do get Luke Cage and Iron Fist in the same, you know, in the same scene.
Because they've unofficially announced the season 3 of Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Maybe you bring Danny Rand into season 3 of Luke Cage and the Iron Fist story continues. And
that's true.
That would be nice to see it happen. So we'll see. In other news, not really a surprise, but it's good news. And Ryan Coogler is going to come back to write and direct Black Panther 2. Obviously Black Panther was highly successful, top 5 at the box office of all time, behind a little movie called The Force Awakens, Avatar, a couple other films. That's right up there.
Yeah.
Hugely successful film this year, so why not bring it back? So your phone's going.
Yeah.
So as much as I think Coogler's a great talent. Creed was fantastic.
He is.
Fruitvale Station was a great. Black Panther's great. So Marvel, smart of them to keep him in there and bring us back to the world of Wakanda again.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's right.
So I'm excited for that. And then I guess the Black Widow movie's official now.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson's apparently getting $15 million to play Black Widow.
$15
in her solo movie. It's hard to argue with Marvel's success, but Scarlett has not had her own personal success leading films.
That's true.
Lucy was okay. Ghost in the Shell was okay. But with the Marvel logo on it, it makes it different. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. According to a lot of memes on the internet.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, Scarlett Johansson can make movies all day. I'm happy.
Happy. I think we've got to see Hawkeye in here.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we will find out what happened in Budapest. Was it Budapest?
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, I fell in love with her back when she showed side boob in The Prestige, you know. So
that's
true.
Let's
do it. You know?
Yeah, man.
Bring more Skojo. In fact, if you remember, back when the Rebel Radio Podcast was an internet radio show back in 2006, do you remember Scarlett Johansson was our unofficial babe?
I think
remember
so.
We had little memes and stuff on our MySpace page back then.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
We put like Photoshop T-shirts on it said Rebel Radio Rules and stuff. We're old school fans of Scarlett Johansson.
That's funny. And I think we did a little Wayne's World-esque thing to it.
I think we did.
Swing.
So, hey, more Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's preview our next movie. And we always play the trailer for the movie on the podcast. You're not going to understand this trailer because it's in Sweden.
Yeah.
Swedish. But we're going to do a little movie from Sweden that came out about not that long ago, 2008, if I remember right, called Let the Right One In.
Vampyr. Hade du tyckt om mig ändå? Vill du bli ihop med mig?
And this is a really, really good vampire movie. Possibly one of my top two or three vampire movies I've ever watched. Have you seen the original Swedish
version? I have only seen Let the Right One In.
Let Me In.
Yeah, Let Me In.
Let Me In was the American remake, which is directed by Matt Reeves. And it's really good, too.
Yeah.
It's almost shot for shot the same movie. There's some slight differences. I've actually read the original book, too, for Let the Right One In. And it's really good. I'm looking forward to this movie, and you're gonna enjoy watching it. It is Swedish, so it's a foreign film, but it's really good. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if you decide to watch Let Me In too this week, because you might want to compare and contrast it.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Because I think Let Me In is still on Netflix, if I remember right. I may do the same thing. It's been a while since I've watched. I've actually only seen Let Me In once. Me and Mary saw it in theaters, and I never did watch it again because I thought it was okay. Because the Swedish version is better, and I had seen the Swedish version first.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a good film to talk about, and you're going to look forward. I look forward to hearing what you have to say about it, because, as you know me a long time, there's a lot of foreign films I really like. And, of course, we did Hardboiled on the show, which is the one foreign film we've done so far. Well, I guess you could count Akira as a
foreign film.
So You know, in foreign films, sometimes people think, oh, you know, I don't want to watch something that's subtitled. It's such a shame because sometimes that's such a bad stigma to have because you can miss out on a really great film.
You really do.
By not watching it just because it's not in English. There's some really good movies out there that mm-hmm. people don't see. So next week on the show, we're going to talk Let the Right One In as Halloween Horrors continue. And we're going to talk some of our favorite vampire movies also on the show, I think, to go with it. So that'll be fun. So it's on Hulu right now. So if you haven't seen Let the Right One In, go to Hulu and watch it so you can be ready for us next week when you listen to the show. Because I know Let the Right One In is a movie a lot of people probably haven't seen. They're probably more familiar with the Chloe Moretz remake that she did, which is mm-hmm. good, too.
Yeah, it's a good film.
And directed by Matt Reeves, who went on to do Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes and Cloverfield. You know, he's a good director, Matt Reeves, so he made a good remake. So that's next week on the Rebel Radio Podcast. Do you have any final thoughts before we get out here? Did you talk to Arnold, man?
Yeah, he's working on it.
All right, go to our YouTube channel. We should have Arnold, Comics with Arnold, a new episode soon. I know
soon.
He's busy filming Terminator, and he's got to get off the ground and do us a new episode.
Yeah. I try not to make him too mad, asking him, you know, too much. You know, you know what he gets. And sometimes he gets so mad you can't understand what he's saying. Yes. So I was like, okay, you know, just, you know, hey, you know, whatever, you know, at your own convenience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and go to therebelradiopodcast.com so you can find a link to our YouTube channel, our Facebook, our Twitter, and all our social media accounts to follow us. As I always say, buy a t-shirt while you're there.
Yeah.
I hopefully will have new ones with our new logo up by the end of the year if I get off my lazy ass and do it. It takes some time to sit there and do the design. But until next week, on the Rebel Radio Podcast, enjoy your week, and we hope you enjoy the episode. And remember, go to Hulu to watch Let the Right One In for next week's episode as Halloween Horrors continues on the Rebel Radio Podcast. As always, this is Mark.
This is Matt.
And just go there and do it.
Hey, you're listening to Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Jay Muse. Snooch to the nooch. Go there and do it.
This is James O'Barr on Rebel Radio. Thanks for listening.